The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. Welcome to BS Report, a sunny Tuesday here in Southern California. Joining us in 30 Rock in New York City, Seth Meyers. What's happening?
Not much. It's a tornado warning here, I think, in New York today.
Tornado warning?
Yeah, they've started doing that now, and everybody's just cool with it.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. You haven't been on the BS Report for a while. You just came off. What'd you do all summer?
I did a bunch of stand up this summer, which was really fun. Tried to relax a little bit because we came back, I guess, like 2 weeks earlier than we usually do.
Right. Your first show was last week, SNL. Yep. Season 38?
You got
37?
It. I think 38.
38. My God.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And then you're doing these Thursday night updates this week and next week on NBC, 8 o'clock p.m.
Prime time.
A little like what you did in 2008. Was the first year, right?
We did three of them in 2008. They were great, really fun. And then we did three of them in 2009 without an election. Less fun. A little weird, in fact.
Yeah, and a little debilitating for you physically.
Yeah. The two in a week, which we have this week, is a little weird.
Yeah.
Because we're so stuck in our way.
We have a lot to talk about, but I think we have to start with there was a stretch there when it seemed like you might become Kelly Ripa's co-host. The rumor mill had it as Kelly and Seth, which I don't know, that title needs some work, but you were in there, and at one point people were saying you were doing it, and yet you had no control over what was actually being dispersed from an information standpoint.
Right.
Were you ever close to doing it?
No, I definitely wasn't. I really like filling in, and I've been doing that over the last couple of years. She's the best. I really like doing the show with her. And then I had agreed to do a week this summer, which was really fun, the idea of like just doing it for a week. And then right before that week started, the rumor came out that I was one of the people that might actually do it. But it was a job that they definitely never offered me. It was a job I definitely never asked for. But it was a very weird week to do it as those rumors were swirling.
Right.
But it is, I think Michael will be great at it.
So did you ever seriously consider doing it if they offered it?
I think with anything, when you sort of hear a rumor of like, oh, you know, they're thinking about you, you sort of like start running it through your head like, oh, what would that be like? You would like work like 10 hours a week and you would have a job for maybe the next 30 years.
And it's very lucrative. We should mention that part.
Yeah.
It's a very,
not
very
that
lucrative franchise.
You and I
franchise.
Are in this for the money, but I would assume that job is very lucrative. So there are a lot of things about it that were really nice. But with that said, I think the fear I would have about going after a job like that is it sort of lacks the sort of pace and challenge of this show.
Right. And also, probably your body would reject. You'd go from, you already have one of the weirdest sleep schedules on the planet, and now you'd be flipping that around for the bizarro version of the sleep schedule.
I know eventually you get used to it, but it was hilarious the week I did it just for, 5 days.
Yeah.
Because you're like home at 10:30.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm going to get so much done. But then you're like, but first I'm going to take that nap that I need.
Right.
And then like all of a sudden it's like 4, and you're like, I kind of feel like this day's gone.
What time did you have to get up to prepare for it?
Well, there's not a ton of preparation for that show, which is a credit to her, because the most fun part of that show is the first 15 minutes when you just like pick up newspaper clippings and just sort of riff.
Yeah.
And they have, the producers over there are great, and they come in and they sort of run down, like the interview talking points, and, Gelman comes in and goes through the news clippings with you as far as like, these might be fun to talk about. But there's not a lot of like, there's not an intensity to the prep, which I think is important because the show is not a show that's built on intensity. It's sort of built on her being charming with whoever she's out there with.
Right. You know, it's funny. Pardon the Interruption is like that, and it took me about 20 times to realize it. I was always over preparing for it.
Yeah.
And you'd get like you'd get the rundown of the schedule, and especially they call it like the A block, the B block, C block, D block. The A block is like the four biggest things to talk about, and you have 90 seconds to talk about it, but your partner is talking about half of it. So really it's 45 seconds. And I'd prepare like 9 points, you know, and then I'd be sitting there trying to juggle all these points in my head. And meanwhile, you only need two. So then the last time I did it, I was just like, I'm just preparing two. And I'm going to try to wing it if it goes beyond that. And I felt a lot more comfortable. But I guess that's what the Kelly Ripa show must be like. You almost don't want to clog your head with things you want to hit.
No. And like, you know, again, like I come from an improv background. It's kind of fun to go out and not know what you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
She's incredibly agile as far as like following what you were talking about.
Yeah.
And doing the same. Like, she set you up really well, and you can set her up really well. The great thing about it is, like, the first segment was always supposed to be, like, 15 minutes, and we would, like, always go 20. And she just seems like she could care less. Like, Gelman is constantly doing, like, the third base coach, like, wrap this up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if she's having a good time, she just, you know, she keeps going. Which it sometimes is really funny, because all of a sudden you, like, have, like, you got to go out in the back and, like, do, like, a grill segment. And then it's like, we got 40 seconds for the grill.
How hard was it to work with Gelman without thinking of Chris Kattan playing Gelman? Get used to it?
You don't really ever get used to it. Gelman looks a lot better than Chris Kattan did as Gelman. So working with the real Gelman was a pleasure. I'm glad I wasn't working with Chris Kattan's Gelman, though.
Everybody who ever crosses paths with Kelly Ripa, it's like this life-altering experience for them. Kimmel's another one who like just loves her to death. And what is it about her? And also, like, what would it be like to be married to her and she can have all these weird connections with anyone she meets? I think I would be jealous the whole time.
You'd probably be. I mean, but, you know, like, her husband's a catch in his own right. I think they're doing pretty good. She's really funny. And she's, like, a perfect person to do that show because she both can relate to people because she's, you know, a mom. And, you know, she loves her kids, but she's also, like, fashionable. And she, like, seems to, like, you know, part of that job, too, which is a part that I think, ultimately have trouble really embracing, is, like, you just have to open your life up to people. Like, they kind of know everything about her. And she seems so happy to share it in a way that's, like, you know, I feel like genuine is a word that gets thrown around a lot with hosts for things. But, like, I truly believe her to be, like, that. You know, what you see of her is really who she is.
Well, I saw the clip when she introduced Michael Strahan, and he ran out, and he picked her up, and he's hugging her, and she's like, you're the one I wanted. And I was thinking, like, poor Seth. I hope he's not watching this. Probably feels jilted.
I do not feel jilted.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I don't feel jilted. And I really do. I hope I can go back and fill in when Michael's off. Cause it is.
I don't
good.
Think she meant that. I think she was just trying to make him feel better. Michael was the only one she wanted.
Right. I think, you know, again, at some point, you know, you pick your quarterback and you can't talk about. If she was Bobby Valentine, she probably would have told everybody exactly who the order in which she wanted to host.
And then after 3 weeks, told Michael Strahan that he needs to step it up and his heart's not totally in it yet.
Or if she would have done that in the beginning before he came out and reintroduced him, just to do it behind his back.
And then said things like, I didn't realize Michael Strahan was black after like the 4 week mark of them working together. Good segue, by the way, the Red Sox.
I was by accident because the last.
No, it was good. I enjoyed it.
Segue.
Yeah, it was a good segue. Worst Red Sox season of our lifetime.
Yep.
Least likable team of our lifetime.
Awful. Just awful.
First time I can remember just totally shutting it down with a Red Sox season and not even watching.
I
can't remember doing that in really ever.
Completely shut it down as well. And then, you know, my dad's from Pittsburgh, and so I kind of, like, I totally bandwagoned onto the Pirates, and, like, right as I did, they just, like, caught whatever the Red Sox had.
Oh, God. Maybe you were to blame.
I feel like at this point I couldn't defend myself against blame like that.
As the unofficial sports are, I'm going to rubber stamp that jump because your dad was involved and because it's a different league. I think the American League National League allows that a little bit.
Right.
Plus, like, who's not rooting for Pittsburgh and Baltimore and all these pathetic franchises that haven't been good in
great. And
forever?
I tip my cap to the new wild card.
Oh, you like it?
I like it just for this reason.
Yeah, we were talking about it. We had a Grantland staff meeting yesterday, and we were trying to figure out what the ramifications of this extra wild card are going to be, and how much harder it makes it for, like, if you're the fifth wild card and you get in, but you burned your best pitcher in that first game, and, you know, by the time your first round series starts, you're down to your number three starter starting the first game of the series, and what's that mean? Is it an advantage for the other teams? It's going to be really interesting.
It's the way the fifth playoff team should feel, which is like super hard.
Yeah.
And, but again, hopefully, it goes to somebody like Baltimore or Pittsburgh, who is literally just happy to be there.
How much fun was it to live in New York City during this last month as they had kind of a pseudo collapse? I can't call it a full collapse, but it was a pseudo collapse.
It's so hard, they still collapsed like five flights up from where the Red Sox were.
Yeah.
So it was I couldn't take any joy in it. I mean, I'm hoping if they don't make the playoffs, I'll obviously try to find a way to say snarky things to my Yankee fan. But
did you feel like they were panicking or like a half panic?
It's kind of like a half panic.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I think they are of the mind that if they make it into the playoffs, it'll all work out.
What about Jets versus Giants and that whole soap opera as it keeps going?
Really fun. Again, there's nothing more fun than like on Monday, it's like the post just uses both covers for one team or the other. And just I love like who's the front of the post and who's the back.
Right.
And so obviously, this was Giants were the front of the post this week. It's fun. I mean, it's fun for me, obviously, when the Steelers are the national game and I don't have to watch DirecTV on a weird computer hookup.
What's the over-under for the Tebow SNL cameo?
Is it like November
10th? He's got to start a game? Really?
I feel like that, and I don't know why I'm saying that. We'd take him Tuesday. We'd take him Thursday. What am I talking about? But I feel like he's got to start a game. That's what I'm going to say. The over-under is over him starting one game.
So Sanchez has to get hurt.
Well, do you think I would never? First of all, I like Sanchez is a good dude. Tebow's a good dude, but I hope no injury happens to either of those guys. But what a mess!
It's a mess.
A mess.
Why? It looks great until they're down 10, and then all of a sudden, yeah. I actually thought they were going to either beat the Steelers or come close, but once the Steelers—that's your team, by the way. Once they went up 10, it was over.
I felt the exact same way. I was panicked when the Jets went down the field. I was like, we might be 0-2. Maybe this is the year. I read certain columnists, a.k.a. you,
yeah,
who say they're old and this is the year they're going to blow up. And then you're right. The minute they were up 10, you're like, oh, the Jets can't come back from down 10.
Yeah, I don't know how much Revis helped.
Yeah.
But or Revis not playing, how much that helped. But the combination of being a little depleted there and then Roethlisberger's supernatural ability to just escape sacks seven times a game. It seemed like eventually the Jets just kind of quit. They didn't quit, but you know what I mean? It just kind of their spirit was broken. Because I do feel like if they played that game 10 times, the Jets would have been in there maybe for 7 or 8 of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so you feeling good about the Steelers or no?
I'm feeling pretty good. Not great. I mean, it is like the Polamalu-Harrison thing is a little troubling because you do, at this point, you're like, oh, this is not, they're never going to be all the way better again.
What needs to happen for us to have a Roger Goodell sketch on SNL?
I think I'm confident, or not, I'm confident I'm writing a replacement ref sketch.
Oh, good.
I feel good about that. I feel like this is now, because we were talking about it yesterday at our topical meeting, and then last night was certainly played into that narrative.
I wrote this Friday, but I do wish they said the jobs for every replacement ref. I do like to know what they do for a living. Al Michaels threw one out on Sunday night that I really appreciated. He said whoever the lead guy was, and he was like, he owns his own engineering company in Houston or whatever. I was like, oh, really?
Yeah.
I think they should why not have fun with it?
Well,
we all know they have fake refs.
Where, like the thing where the offenses and defenses tell you where they went to college. They should have those guys look right down the lens and, manages as staples.
I mean, the guy who turned out to be the Saints fan, that was probably the funniest sports story of 2012. He's got the Facebook photos of him wearing Saints stuff. It's just excellent. It was like the worst nightmare. And, you know, Steve Young made the point last night on the postgame show after Monday Night Football that people seem to think like this is going to pressure the NFL to do something. I tweeted that last night. I was like, all right, now they'll bring the real refs back. That game was so ridiculous, that Denver-Atlanta game. And yet, Steve Young made the point, no, actually, this is, what do they care? People care about what's happening, and if they have an opinion, even if it's a negative one, at least they're still watching. It's not like less people are watching the games. The rating last night didn't go down.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, the fact that we now kind of know it, football kills people.
Yep.
And people are still okay with it. Like, they're going to get through this ref thing. Certainly, as a viewer, I'm not, you know, on a Sunday weighing that as to whether or not I'm going to watch the game.
Right. But you just made the point for why they should settle this ref thing, because they've, you know, made such a belated attempt to pretend that they care about the health of the players, and now these games are so disjointed, and teams have kind of figured out now how to take advantage of the refs.
Yeah.
So, if anything, they're putting their players at more risk. And for the amount of money that it is, it's $50
million. Yeah.
A league that makes, I don't know.
I think they make all the money.
They make all the money.
Last year, they made all the money.
And it's a league that, in just the way that television habits are going, and the fact that you can tape everything now, but you can't tape sports. So it's the one league where their commercial time has actually become a little bit more valuable.
Yeah.
And it was already the most valuable property. So it's hard for me to fathom how it could be $50 million. You know, that reminds me, SNL is a show that people used to watch live, and then you could tape. And now it's almost like it doesn't matter how you watch it or consume it.
Right.
You could really just skip the show entirely and watch clips the next day and not even watch them in any sort of sequence. Does that affect how you prepare for it?
It doesn't affect how we prepare for it. And I do hope there's still some joy in watching it live while other people watch it, and that sort of collective viewing experience that I think all of us in the content business are desperately holding on to as an idea
right.
that might have some traction. But the nice thing is that SNL was always built for the internet, even before there was an internet, which is,
right.
you know, it's none of it. One piece doesn't affect the next piece. You can watch it in small doses. The nice thing for us is I do feel like the pieces kind of have a long tail through the week, and you can sort of find out from either Hulu or NBC.com, like, what had the sort of biggest impact on any given week.
It's a little bit like what happened with music, where you don't really need to buy an album anymore. You can just cherry pick the best songs.
Right.
And you could argue that every SNL episode's like an album, but you don't have to listen to the album. You could just grab the three songs that are the three most popular sketches on Hulu, and that's how you follow the show.
It's a compilation album. That's what I
Yeah. I would think that's a little bit dangerous.
Oh, yeah. It's all dangerous at this point.
On the other hand, you now have people who, if they fell asleep at 12:10 and never saw the last 50 minutes of the show, now with DVRs, they can just zoom through it, and it's actually easier to watch the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is, well, you've been here live. You saw the show live.
Yeah.
Live is the only place where you can't believe how many commercials there are. Because, like, when you're here live, you kind of, for the first time, understand, like, the logistics of how the show works and, like, how we need that commercial time to, like, move everything from
right.
one side of the studio to the other. But I'm not so old that I forget how frustrating it was to watch the show with all the commercials.
The biggest thing that I guess, if this is, would you call this a transition season? Kind of feel like it is.
Absolutely.
All right. Biggest thing that happened was Kristen Wiig left.
Yep.
Second biggest thing that happened was Andy Samberg left, and you know, you didn't, unless I blacked out, you didn't run a digital short in that first episode, correct?
We didn't. We had some pre-tape elements. You know, we did Haters, Clint Eastwood, and we had the Bane
yeah.
ad. So, in a way, like last year, we had a really nice, I sort of personally feel like return to form on the commercial parodies.
Mm-hmm.
The team of guys that's doing that now is really, really good. And part of it is you just want to find a new way to do it. So I don't think they're going to be digital shorts. Might be wrong on that, but I do feel like this year you'll see completely new voices trying to do sort of pre-tape elements that help us get through the show.
So usually when you have a transition year, I always like the transition years because sometimes the people who were there who had such a hold on the show, it's harder for the younger guys to kind of break in. And then once that void is there, it's almost like a basketball team where all of a sudden now everybody gets to shoot more. And you can kind of you can get some unexpected surprises and things like that. One of the things I thought was interesting was you turned Obama over to Jay Farrell.
Yes, we did.
What was the decision making process there? Because you had somebody who was already doing it who's still in the cast.
Well, one thing is, you know, I think if Obama wins re-election, Fred will probably not be here for the next 4 years. So at some point, there's going to have to be a handover.
Yep.
And, you know, Fred is, compared to 4 years ago when he took on Obama, Fred's got all this other stuff going on in his life, mostly Portlandia, which is this incredible show where, you know, he was, you know, SNL was nominated for best writing at the Emmys, and so was Fred for writing Portlandia. Like, he's basically, like, you know, being an integral part of two full sketch shows. And I think ultimately, he was happy to pass on Obama and not have to sort of worry about how much that asks of you through this election season. And, you know, Jay in year three was more than ready to take it on, and it was really exciting to turn it over. I was really happy we saved the bullet of the turnover in to start this transition year. It was another way to sort of, like, signal to people, like, oh, this is going to be different this year.
Mm.
And so it was a nice bullet to have for last week, and it was really fun. And I can't say enough about how gracious Fred was about the handover.
Yeah.
And
I mean, you literally did it on the show.
Yeah, we literally handed it over, which was really important to Fred because he, you know, Fred didn't want people to think that it had been taken away from him. And Fred didn't want people to think that he had any animosity towards Jay. And, you know, Fred is really, you know, as one of the best seniors I've ever seen here, as far as how he treats the new people and how he works with them, and that was certainly one of his finest moments.
Bill Hader said we were hanging out at the NBA Finals when he single-handedly changed the course of the finals by going to Game Two. I don't know if you knew about that, but
yeah.
He's being blamed for that loss now. And he was saying that one of the most underrated things about being on that show is the responsibility of being the person who carries that opening sketch, who says live from New York, and just like that there's a weird sort of pressure and that nobody understands like what's that like, what it's like the first time you do it, when you have to stare in that camera and you know you're about to do it and it's this big moment that's been happening for 4 decades, and that, you know, sometimes you never know with a cast member until that moment happens. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. There's very little space between you and the camera, especially when, you know, you do an in one, which is just, you know, like what Jay was doing last week, which is like looking down the barrel.
Yeah.
And it's really eerie to just be talking to America live before the credits have rolled. Like, it's, you know, we call it a cold open just for that reason. You know, you were starting cold. And I remember last year we did something where Bill played Shepard Smith. And I had to play one of the Romney sons because we were just like short of white dude.
Yeah.
And I was out on the floor, and it's been so long since I've had to do anything like that. You know, I did a few cold opens back in my day, but, you know, I haven't been in sketches for years. And I went out and I was like, oh my God, like Bill is just standing there, you know, 300 people are looking at him, and then someone's going to point at him and he's just going to start this TV show.
Yeah.
And I think as a writing staff, we sometimes forget like how much we're asking of them. And how important it is to work with them as far as like finding things in the impression that work for them that can be sort of like signposts along the way for them to feel a little more comfortable. But with that said, like, I thought Jay, for doing it for the first time, had an incredible show. So.
And it's a weirdly tense being in there in the room. It's really tense that 30 seconds before. I mean, it's always tense to watch a TV show in the 30 seconds before it goes live, but especially because you have the warm-up act and, you know, there's music, and then all of a sudden it gets quiet, and then you hear somebody go like, all right, we got a minute.
And the band like, 30. Plays a slow song, too. Lauren feels very strongly that so it's not like this big upbeat party. You know, like Sudeikis comes out, Sudeikis does the warm-up for our show.
Yeah.
And then like Keenan comes out and he'll sing a song. And then, you know, the band will play like a real slow jazzy version of People Get Ready, and then it gets like deathly quiet. And, you know, they walk Jay up to the podium, and he's just standing there. And people are kind of just, like, watching him in silence for 45 seconds.
And he had to have been nervous that first time.
Yeah, I think he was nervous. Absolutely. But the great thing about both Fred and Jay are they have always been people who performed in front of live audiences.
Yeah.
Jay's a stand-up. Jay worked all summer. He's worked all summer. He works during the week. And he's just a guy who is, like, getting his hours on stage. And so I do think he was nervous, but I think he's also a pro.
What were the three biggest things over the summer that you were mad didn't happen when SNL was on the air?
Gosh, I don't even know. I feel like I just shut it down in the summer. I mean, I feel like we just snuck in the Clint Eastwood. I mean, that was probably...
Yeah, you're in the expiration date of the milk.
We were in the expiration date. We wouldn't have done it if we didn't have haters Eastwood.
You had to do it.
Yeah, you had to do it. But that was one where, as it was happening, I was like, oh, I wish this was a week closer.
I would say the cruise home stuff was pretty good.
Yeah. Again, though, it's funny because, like, with the Eastwood thing, you know you have the Eastwood. Like, we don't have the cruise or the homes. So you would have to hope that you'd be able to pull that off. Like, the hard ones are when something happens to some, you know, where you already have the impression and you're like, oh, that would have been so much fun.
Right. I'm thinking cruise homes. What was the other? Oh, I guess, I don't know if you would have gone near this, but the Kristen Stewart Pattinson.
Yeah, that would have
been. I guess those are the two big celebrity things.
You know what I
summer.
Will say, which, you know, can't work because it's NBC, but it would be really fun to be on during the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
That
I mean, even
really
the Lochte thing you guys did on Weekend Update, which was super late but still worked because it was Lochte. He was like a walking parody.
He was great. That was. We did not think we wrote a sketch that we didn't do, which was a talk show sketch where Seth MacFarlane played Lochte.
Yeah.
And we didn't pick the sketch, but all, like, Thursday, everybody was like, that was a really funny Lochte. And one of our writers, this guy Rob Klein, came up with the idea that, you know, what if he was just reviewing new TV shows? And
right.
We didn't give that to MacFarlane until late on Friday night, but he was really funny doing it.
I thought he was good.
He was great.
And I continue to think, I said this to a friend of mine who writes for a show, I continue to think we're headed towards some sort of massive MacFarlane meltdown. It's been going too well for him for too long. It's been the Scarface montage. When he gets married and he has the tiger and it's
right.
Just like everything's hanging, they're printing money and they're making the cocaine. And it's been going like that for him for 8 years.
Yeah.
I feel like it's got to turn at some point.
I'd never met the guy before Monday of last week. Absolute gentleman. Couldn't have been a nicer guy. It was really, I mean, the other thing is when you have somebody who like legitimately runs a empire.
Yeah.
You almost wouldn't blame them if they came in and were like, well, here's how I like to do things.
Yeah.
He did not do that at all. He was the perfect host. It was really fun. And again, like, he does have, like, a crazy good voice, not just for, like, singing, but, like, he has, like, one of the all-time voices. He has, like, a hater voice.
Yeah. And could do, like, lots and lots of impressions.
Yeah. He was really fun, and I think had a really good time.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah, because sometimes you'll have the people who bring in like two of their own writers, which never goes over that well.
He did bring in a couple writers who were guys who worked here years ago.
And
they were great. They knew exactly. I think because they worked in a writer's room as well.
Yeah.
And they probably have guests who stop by there. They knew exactly how to act. And it was great having them there.
Who's hosting the show this week?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Oh,
he did the show.
Yeah, he did last year, right?
I know. I think it might be 3 years ago now. Yeah, 3 years ago. We really like him. He's kind of like, it's too early to call something like this, but he has like a really good, like, walk-in-y, offbeat energy.
Yeah.
And we didn't know that until like Friday of last time. Like, I feel like we know like his strengths now a lot better.
Hmm.
So I'm hoping it'll be great.
Who else is hosting?
I think the week after is Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig?
Yeah.
And who else is on the wish list?
I don't know who else is on the wish list. Who do you think we should go after right now?
Well, it's also, you talk about transition. It's a little bit of a transition from the old school staples.
Yeah.
We've got to
look for the new staples. I'd love to have Melissa McCarthy back this year. I'd love to make her a staple.
You could argue that I guess John Hamm has become something of a staple, right?
Something of a staple. Hamm, I think, did 3 years in a row and then took a year off, so hopefully we'll get him back.
But he made like 15 cameos.
He did show up a lot. He did show up a lot. Look, you know, once you're on the plus one at SNL, you might as well show up whenever you're in town.
Yeah, why not? You have, who's the other one I was thinking? The guy who did it last year. Oh, Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
As kind of the good-looking guy who's can roll with the punches kind of role.
He, one of the nicest people I've ever met, Channing Tatum.
Everybody likes him.
He's really nice.
Yeah, he's kind of, he's another guy. I'd be interested to see how his next few years go. Because I never knew 21 Jump Street was good. We just kind of on-demanded it because there's nothing else. And it was really funny. Yeah,
I
was like, whoa.
I saw it on a plane. Sorry, I saw it on a movie. I saw it on an airplane. I loved it.
The two movies I was the most shocked by this year were 21 Jump Street and Project X.
Oh, I didn't see Project X.
Which I saw on a flight from post-Olympics flight back to America. That was like 10 hours. But, you know, had zero expectations and had no idea what it was about. I actually thought it was like a horror movie. And was just so pleasantly surprised. There's nothing better than being pleasantly surprised.
There's also nothing better than watching the movie on the transatlantic flight.
Yeah, because it's 10 hours. What else are you going to do?
And they usually have pretty good movie selections, which is exciting.
Yeah, they place a premium on that. How long did you go to the Olympics for?
4 nights.
What was the best thing you saw?
I love the Olympics. I love the Olympics. I would say the women's gymnastics. I saw both the team and individual, which was great.
Oh yeah, we were in the building for the team one. The team one was awesome. I was trying to tell people back home like what it was like, and it's just you can't really describe it.
Well, we were texting, and it was that thing you just knew they were going to win, which was the best. Especially like being of like Boston, being of New England sports fan. Like it's very rare in your life to watch something and go like, oh, we have the best team.
Yeah, they got locked in about halfway through, and it was really cool. But I think my favorite thing about it was the marching between the when everybody had to shift to the next event, mm-hmm. and they'd play that happy music, and then everybody would march. It was just I thought it was a great in-person experience, and I really didn't like the swimming. I probably didn't go far enough when I compared the swimming versus gymnastics in a column, because I think the swimming community, they probably would have burned my house down, but it's just boring in person. It's boring to watch people swim. It's boring.
It needs to be on television. And TV
you have to.
Great,
but you don't even know what happens. You can't even tell who won if it's two close people. Yeah.
But gymnastics is great. You also, over the course of 2 hours, can kind of figure out what is better and what's worse.
Right.
My favorite thing was the Romanian girls, which I'm sure in real life are like 5'5".
Yeah.
But like all the other girls are 4'8". Like looked like 8 foot tall women.
Yeah, they look. It was like Dikembe Mutombo in an NBA game or something.
And then you
were
like, I bet if I saw him in person, this would be one of the more disappointing things.
An optical illusion. Yeah, my daughter, the gymnasts were on Ellen, our Olympic team. We're on Ellen like probably 2 weeks ago. And my daughter's friend works for the show, and she ended up going and got a picture with them after. My daughter's 7, but she's super tall, so she's probably as tall as like a 9-year-old. She could have passed for being on the team. That's how little they were.
Yeah.
Like she's in front of them, and it's like she almost could have been the short gymnast on the team. They're tiny.
They're really little.
They're little pixies.
And they're incredible. And they are incredible to watch.
Yeah. And it's also, I tried to capture this in that column, but there's no way to really capture it. There's nothing like when they wipe out. Like the feeling in the audience, especially like in the crowd, especially, you know, when it happened to a couple of the British girls.
Yep.
Just like, oh, like just this sound you just don't hear in any other sporting event. I guess you might hear it like in hockey if somebody just gets wiped out on mid-ice on a check and they don't see, or in football even. But it's a different sound. It's not a sound you hear.
The other thing I didn't realize, which you kind of get, I guess, looking back on watching on television, but like that all four are happening at once.
And oh, yeah.
So somebody on the balance beam has got to do it while they're listening to, like, the techno version of, like, Hava Nagila. And then also someone on the bar, you know, someone over on the bars is getting a you know, giant applause.
Right.
They just have to keep their head right and do their thing.
Didn't it make you mad at tennis and golf?
Yes.
It's like, really? We have to shut up for tennis? And these people are like, you know, doing a vault where they could get paralyzed if they hit the vault the wrong way. Or
flying,
you know,
in the air.
Yeah. And there's five things going on. As you said, they're somebody would be in the balance beam about to do their last dismount, and all of a sudden this explosion of cheers happen. But I guess they must just tune it out entirely.
Yes, but it is true that you would think then that other sports would manage to tune it out as well.
Yeah, and golf especially.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, golf is very important to the world of golf, that they make it seem like it's the hardest mental challenge
right.
that's ever been, you know, attempted by man.
Like tennis, you can allegedly get it because supposedly you have to hear the sound.
Right.
Of the rack and the ball, which I don't know is...
I met Federer.
Oh.
I'm going to drop this on you. And
nice.
I'm going to tell you, he was fun. Roger Federer was really funny.
What?
Not like, I mean, this is kind of a weighted funny, but like he was he had a really good sense of humor, and I was impressed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you have to have an athlete this year as a rule.
I know, but I don't know who it's going to be, like, because you lose basketball just because of when our season runs. So we've already lost basketball, pretty much.
Right.
So
yeah, it's over.
It's over. And
nobody, you couldn't, there's no famous, I'm a Kings season ticket holder. Don't take this personally, hockey fans, but there's not a famous enough hockey player to host SNL.
So that's out.
Yeah.
We could have, if there had been a huge Olympic star, we maybe would have considered it for the first week, but it didn't seem like that happened.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Now,
also, Phelps, I love Phelps, who we had 4 years ago. Obviously one of the biggest stars to ever come out of the Olympics. But, you know, having Phelps for the full 90 minutes, you know, that's when you realize the benefit of, like, a Seth MacFarlane, who's from
right.
comedy.
Well, anytime you have an athlete, it's you're usually having to write things where they play themselves.
Yeah.
Or they're dressed up as a woman.
Those are the two moves.
Those are the two moves.
Eli Manning, I kind of feel like I love Eli Manning more than anyone.
He really threw himself into that.
He was the texting scene, which is like an all-timer for an athlete.
Yeah.
He was just really funny.
Yeah.
He was exactly what you thought he would be, which is he's the more laid-back brother.
Right. Well, maybe that's the athlete. Maybe there's some football player.
Right.
Maybe it's Tim Tebow after the Jets win the Super Bowl.
If the Jets win the Super Bowl and Tim Tebow is quarterback, I guarantee you he'll.
I still think we see Tebow on the show before Thanksgiving.
All right.
I'm throwing it out there. I can already see him sitting next to Lindsey Buckingham.
I said the over-under was one start. I feel like I'm going to shift it. The over-under on him hosting is one touchdown in a Jets uniform, either thrown or rushed.
One touchdown. Oh, wow. You just lowered it.
Well, yeah. It's hard, though. I mean, it's not like he's not on the field. I mean, he, by the way, people were like, said he was ineffective. He was on the field for three plays. One of them was a 22-yard run.
Maybe the move is to have Sanchez and Tebow host the show together.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
And just a lot of, like, Rex Ryan shuttling them in and out of sketches.
They're getting switched midway through.
We have plenty of sketches here. If you could, you'd just like change it all halfway through.
So who out of the transition, who was like the biggest winner in terms of screen time, do you think?
Well, you know, I think we kind of have it in like two groups right now, but you know, we have Taryn, Vanessa, and Jay are all fairly new. I think it's going to be like, I think Bobby Moynihan, who kind of like made a lot of noise last year as sort of being one of the guys on the show. I think Bobby's going to have a great year.
But so you're predicting a career, Bobby Moynihan's highest WAR ever.
I think so.
And
I think
a big OPS.
He definitely had his highest WAR last year, but I think he's going to improve on that WAR. I love what I'm, Taron Killam had a great year last year. Obviously, Jay. The new people are really, you know, we kind of have four new people because we brought in Kate McKinnon just at the very end of last year. I think she only did three or four shows. And so we have her, and we have three new people from Chicago, Tim Robinson.
Didn't you get all three of the new people are from Chicago Second City, right?
Yeah.
Can you remember that happening before?
I cannot. It's been a long time. There was, I mean, sort of like Horatio and Dratch and Tina all came in around the same time, but not, I think, all three together.
Right.
But it's great. They all know each other. They didn't, none of them were on a stage together at the same time. But it is really nice to come in and sort of just have some people that are, you're going through it together with.
Is it weird that you're hiring people and then somebody can write about it and then immediately you can just go on YouTube and see footage of them? Whereas
hate,
10
I
years
that.
Ago, yeah, it's not good,
so
right?
Much. I hate it. I don't blame anybody for doing it, but I feel for them. Like, I just feel like here you finally are like, but now you will see my stuff. Fully professional. And people are like, well, let's go look at who it is. Like, again, we live in the most impatient society of all time.
Here's a much crappier version of that impersonation before they figured out how to do it.
Yeah, not e- or like before
ago.
They knew lighting. You
yeah.
know what I mean? It's like, that's the worst part. Like,
right.
you just, you, there's no better way to know how young improvisers live than to watch their YouTube videos, because they're all in like the same kind of apartment.
What's the biggest piece of advice you would give to the people in that community who have their eye on potentially doing this for a living on a certain show on NBC at 11:30?
To people who have not been hired on the show.
Yeah, to like a 22-year-old who just moved to L.A. and is trying to get on the Groundlings or something.
Well, I mean, sadly the advice I would give to anyone is like, get on the Groundlings. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to get on SNL, you have to impress another community first. It's really hard for us to just find people everywhere. So, you know, that's why, you know, when we go to Chicago, you know, we try to go to Improv Olympic, or sort of IO now, I guess. And there was the place I came up with called Improv Olympic, which I believe then got sued by the Olympics and now has to be called IO.
Seriously?
I'm pretty sure that's true.
So how much scouting did you do? Was it like a 2-week thing? Was it like a month long thing?
No, well, people send in tapes, which we have a talent department that goes through all the time. You know, the stand-ups we have here are always kind of coming back and being like, I saw this person who's really good. We went to Chicago this summer and probably, I think over the course of 3 nights, went out and saw like 2 shows a night. So probably saw about, you know, 40 people over the course of 3 nights.
And is it one of those things you just kind of know right away?
You know right away if there's someone you want to see again. You know, the
right.
people we hired from Chicago, we saw them in Chicago, and then they came to New York 2 different times to audition.
Has there been anybody in the last few years, or that somebody that Lauren said where he just knew in the first 5 minutes?
Wig.
Like, there was no question? Wig. Interesting.
Wig's audition was one of those ones where, like, a minute into it, you knew she'd be here for 7 years.
What's interesting was her first show, I actually remember thinking, oh, that's somebody.
Yeah.
You just kind of tell.
And she'd kind of been, you know, she'd made Groundlings for a while, I think. Maybe I'm getting that wrong. But she wasn't, you know, fresh off the boat, so to speak. Like, she kind of, it was amazing. I can't believe, it's our good fortune that no one had seen yet that, like, she was going to be this incredible person. That
right.
she kind of, because that is the other thing, too, is now, you know, there are more places for people to do stuff. You know, it isn't just like waiting around for SNL, which is great. But, you know, we have to find people. We have to work a lot harder.
You know, would you say you skew toward being more of a liberal show? I think that's a fair statement, right?
I think you could certainly make the argument. Yes, there are more, I would say, liberal people involved in the show.
Like, do you feel a pressure now? And I know a couple people have made this point that, you know, the Obama is more of a straightforward impersonation of him, but Romney is somebody that, you know, totally over the top and typical, really good Sudeikis. He does the same thing with Biden. And we've talked about this before on the podcast, where the best impressions aren't even really impressions. They're a tiny piece of an impression that gets blown
right.
out into something ridiculous, and that's when it becomes funny. Why do that with Romney but not with Obama?
Well, you know, I would defend this by saying we do it with Biden as well. So it's not just
fair
politics.
Point.
And,
right.
you know, I think if Biden was president, I still think we'd do it with Biden because he would be that kind of president. Like, I
yep.
think it reflects, and we certainly had plenty of fun with Bill Clinton.
that couldn't be more true.
So I do, you know, believe in my heart of hearts that you were just reflecting what we have with Obama. And,
yeah, it's tough.
You know,
I don't even know the crazy direction you'd have to go.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd almost like have to turn him into Cyrus from the Warriors.
Yeah. I mean, we've tried different things. It'll be fun. I mean, I think you know, one of the benefits of Jay is it's something he does in his act, and there are parts of it that he's going to bring to us as things he's found just from doing it a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's a guy who, you know, everybody said, everything you read is this guy is an overthinker. And overthinkers are the hardest people to lampoon because they've sort of thought everything through.
The Vanity Fair piece was fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, that he got incredible access, and he's also a very good writer, Michael Lewis. So the combo of that was, you know, I was just riveted. In general, that might have been one of the best magazine issues in the history of magazines between that and the cruise story.
Oh, the cruise story. They did, the Vanity Fair teased out that cruise story. They really used Twitter in a way.
Yeah.
Because I was one of the things where I was going, I was just trying to find a magazine that wasn't out yet.
Yeah. I was reading the cruise story, and my kids were swimming, and I, for about 15 minutes there, I got to be honest, if anything could happen to the kids, I wouldn't notice. I was so into the story. I was like, what? And then what? And then, you know, it's good when in like the first few paragraphs, they have to use parentheses for each one. Like, we try to reach this person.
Yep,
they wouldn't comment. This person denies this ever happened. It's like, whoa, they're going parentheses that early. But, man, those two pieces together were something.
It was great. There was a great, I apologize for not remembering the right, but a great New Yorker piece about Clinton and Obama as well, I want to say.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Which was another great piece about him.
Yeah, and it's funny because I mentioned in a column, I read a book called The President's Club, which was way more interesting than I expected. And that book was kind of, or that piece was kind of the lost chapter of that, because it was basically what that entire book was about, was presidents using old presidents for advice and counsel, or, you know, in a lot of cases they feuded with the president or whatever. But it was pretty interesting. But the Obama thing, I guess you could maybe talk me in a direction of, I always kind of feel like Michelle Obama wears the pants in the family a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a direction, but even then, I don't know.
Yeah.
Where she, you know, he's kind of like
it's
the whipped husband.
Like, that's not a bad premise for a sketch, but it's not like an overarching.
Right. It's a one sketcher.
Yeah.
It's like the famous sketch from the 80s when Reagan was pretending to be, and then everybody left the room, and all of a sudden he was like this, you know, evil planner. But yeah, you couldn't have done that for
him. That might have been the only time Hartman played Reagan.
Now, I think it happened. It was just that nobody remembers those shows.
Right.
I think he did a few. His Clinton was still, that was probably my single favorite presidential impersonation on the show. He just nailed it. He nailed every funny thing about Clinton.
Well, that was, I felt like people were referencing the Clinton sort of using McDonald's food or whatever it was, French fries, to explain things after his.
Yeah.
That one really has stood the test of time.
It was weird because he was totally making fun of him, but it actually made me like Clinton more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like a kind of a weird win for Clinton. But
that was the best. Yeah, you're right. I think that was Hartman's.
What do you do with Paul Ryan?
Well, you know, we did a little peek in.
Not a lot to work with, though.
Not a lot to work with. Again, like a guy who's like the most interesting thing about him comedically is his policy positions, which is never good.
It's kind of a blank slate when you're just looking at him. Just seems
I will say, with that said, I'm really looking forward to the vice presidential debate, because that is really like a classic, like heart versus head, young versus old.
Yeah, yeah.
Could be like a real sort of like, you know, Rumble in the Jungle type thing. Where you I think that this is where we'll see exactly how crafty is, like Biden crazy like a fox, or is he just crazy?
And some fodder for you guys. I was thinking about you during the conventions. You weren't on the air yet, but with social media now, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Like anything that happens at those conventions just gets digested immediately, and every conceivable joke has been written.
Yeah.
And then for a show like yours, like even if the debate is on like a Tuesday, by Saturday, it's like you almost have to reinvent what the comedic take is, right?
Absolutely. I mean, again, the thing we do have going for us, and by the way, thank God for this, because there's so many good shows that are talking about politics in a way that's like at a level that's impossible to compete with if they're getting there first, certainly.
Yeah.
Is we have actors who play the characters. And so, you know, you hope on a day, like even if it's combed over, like if we can sort of go like, well, we know you've heard a lot of jokes about this, but you haven't seen Jason Sudeikis talk about it yet. So hopefully that will give it enough added value that it'll be worth watching.
How often do you get accused by people on Twitter, like just random blogs, that you took a joke or whatever?
I will say, like, when, you know, if you, like, sometimes people write, like, you know, like, some people, like, who, you know, have a Twitter account I don't follow will say, like, I'm so honored you stole my joke, which that's what I appreciate.
Right. Like, you, there's no possible way you could have seen it.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody busts me too hard. I get a lot of heat from Penn State fans for my Paterno joke last week.
Oh.
A lot of heat. But I think I'm okay with it.
Heat in terms of, like, they wished you would die?
No, nothing like that. They were like, shame on you. And a lot of them were like, shame on you. You know, there's Joe Paterno wasn't a pedophile. Jerry Sandusky was. The joke was Al Pacino was in Talk to Play. Second movie he'll be in with the line, say hello to my little friend. And we were talking, like, in my mind, Joe Paterno doesn't have that line in that movie. Someone else does. So I did, but it was that thing of, like, where you realize you don't engage with people on Twitter. I didn't want to explain, like, oh, no. In the movie, the joke we were making,
right,
Sandusky would say the line to Paterno.
The joke was pretty clear.
I do. There's also that great thing of people who are defending what happened at Penn State and are saying, how dare you, about a joke.
Right.
Which I love.
Do you worry that, in general, our society is becoming, and Twitter is the captain of this, just the self-righteousness that just exists all the time. And it is a little dangerous for humor, because you can't know where the lines are unless you test the lines a little bit. And if people get in the mentality of they're just terrified to even go near a line, humor is going to suffer. And you're going to have to cross the line every once in a while, even if it's by mistake or as you're calibrating where it is, to end up in a good place. And that's what I worry about these next couple of years. You agree?
Yeah, I'm a little worried, but I think it's going to be okay. I feel like what I'm hoping is, like, humor is so important to everyone. Like, no matter kind of where you're at on the political spectrum.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, look, and there are people whose jobs it is to be angry about things. Like, people, in a way I respect. They have to defend certain ground. And so you're going to make a joke every now and then where they stand up and say that was too far. And, you know, hopefully they understand that, you know, ultimately it kind of all goes around and everybody gets, you know, everybody hears a joke that they wish they hadn't heard.
Right.
But I think it's going to be okay.
Yeah, because you notice that with the Comedy Central roast, which I still enjoy. It seems like one of the few places where you can kind of, everybody kind of understands going in, all right, you can say whatever joke you want to say.
Right.
But yet, Amy Schumer got in trouble two roasts ago because she made a joke about Steve-O and the guy, I'm blanking, oh, Ryan Dunn, who had just died.
Right.
And everybody decided that was off limits, and it was really brutal for her. I mean, they came after her, and it was about as bad as that situation could get. And it was just interesting because if you watch the rest of that roast, you know, it was lines are being crossed left and right. And somehow that became the line. And it just made me wonder, like, oh, you know, this isn't a good direction.
Well, with that said, like, I feel like that direction's always been around. Like, there's always been the joke where people are like, how dare they? You know?
You think when SNL did the Uncle Roy sketches with Buck Henry in the 70s, there were people getting mad at it, but we just didn't know because there was no internet?
Oh, yeah, or there were, like, letters. But
just angry
it is
letters.
Funny, like, Lorne will still say, which it, like, just is great because it shows how long he's been here.
Yeah.
He'll say, like, we're going to get letters. And you're like, oh, we're not going to get letters. Someone
letters.
Has sent us an email. But, like, I'm sure back in the day, they would literally get letters, which is the greatest.
Right.
That would be so much more, that's such a more entertaining way to read criticism, is to have to, like, open an envelope.
And read, like, and I hope it hasn't been contaminated in some way.
Right.
I'm due for like a 10-hour podcast with Lauren at some point. You're going to have to arrange it. We could show up. We'll set a time. He could be 6 hours late for it. It'll be perfect.
It'll be good. He will. I'm going to get working on him.
It should happen soon.
Yeah.
With the 4 decades of SNL now to discuss.
You are the historian. You know it better than anyone.
I kind of do.
You do.
You know, I was bored. I've been reading all these iBooks. I just banged out the Belushi Wired book, which I know that everyone in the SNL community hates, but
right.
I don't think I'd read it since it came out, and it was like the iBook selections were, you know, sometimes they're not that great, and I just wanted something I could bang out pretty quickly, and that got that put me on another run. I went back on another SNL run this summer.
Oh, great.
I banged them all out probably in like a week and a half. But
I want to get you in I want to have you, next time you're in New York, you got to come to my office just so I can show you my favorite dress sketches from the last 10 years. That's what I feel like we should do, a little film festival.
Are you going to put those online?
We're trying.
Some of them are online, right?
This last year, we pretty much any time there was something that we thought we weren't going to do again and we liked, we would put it online. So we tried really hard last year to do that.
I just wish you guys had a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I hope somebody from Hulu is listening. I know you can't say anything, so you can just stay silent.
Okay, cool.
The commercials are too long. In this day and age, commercials should not be 35 seconds between sketches. You shouldn't trap us in front. Nobody wants to sit in front of a computer for 35 seconds. And it's like this mentality that we have to do commercials the way we did them in the 1950s. Whereas in the internet audience, you're going to lose somebody in 10 seconds unless you kind of figure out a way to keep them. I think all these commercials, if it's on the internet, it should be a 10-second commercial. And we should start producing 10-second commercials and figuring out if there's a real art for how to do them. I don't understand what makes anybody think that people in 2012 want to watch a 35-second commercial.
It's hard. I really do sympathize, though, with the people whose job it is to get money from advertisers in this day and age.
Listen, this is something we've been battling with Grantland, and there's no way around it. That's the length, and that's it. You can't do anything about it. But it just seems like the whole ad sales community should kind of get together and have some sort of Yalta summit about it, and all make the collective decision. This is stupid.
We had to cut together like the 15-second package of all our writers' names for the Creative Arts Emmys last week.
Yeah.
And our writer, John Mulaney, came up with a great idea, which said the following clip is brought to you by Hulu. And so our entire 15 seconds was just that, a commercial.
That's
excellent.
And then
excellent. Just an icon clicking no was, is this ad relevant to you? And then it ended, and just in time for Lorne Michaels.
We should say his comedy special was really funny.
Oh, it was great.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it was sometime this summer. I stumbled across it.
New in town, I believe.
Yeah, it was good.
It was awesome.
All right, so for you, we're promoting Thursday night, 8 o'clock, NBC. Special week. What was it called?
Weekend Update Thursdays, I think we're
Weekend Update Thursdays.
Yeah.
There's two of them. And then you have Joseph Gordon-Levitt Saturday night. And
yeah.
You have Daniel Craig the following week. Who are the bands?
I should know who they are.
You get a little John Mayer cameo.
Yeah, not bad, right?
Did he come to the party?
Of course he came to the party. It's John Mayer.
I don't even know why I asked that question. I shouldn't have had to ask that question.
Yeah.
Were there girls involved?
I think there were. I mean, there were girls at the party. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't like...
Oh, then that means there were girls involved with John Mayer. Oh, man.
Mumford & Sons and,
nice.
And Muse.
Ooh.
So
two good ones.
Yeah, pretty good.
All right. Thanks for checking in, Seth Meyers.
It's great to check in. And I do want to give a shout out to my 3-0 Northwestern Wildcat.
Oh. I didn't think you were going to jinx it by mentioning it on the podcast, but you did. And
I
now
did.
It's a guaranteed loss on Saturday. I'm betting against them.
They're playing like either North or South Dakota State. I feel pretty good.
All right.
All right.
Good luck to you.
Thanks, my friend.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Target to set off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.